You're cruising down the highway, windows rolled down, tunes blasting from the radio. You're in the zone and living the dream. Suddenly, your car sputters, coughs, and throws a wrench in your whole day. Tow trucks, repair bills, the dream turns into a nightmare. Don't wait until car trouble steals your peace of mind. Visit CarShield now at carshield.com/Carlson. For nearly 20 years, CarShield has helped millions of drivers avoid the stress of major repairs. They offer plans covering up to 5,000 parts and systems, from your engine and transmission to electronics and more, all for a low monthly rate that fits your budget. CarShield plans also include unlimited miles, 24/7 roadside assistance, and rental options. Get peace of mind now. Visit CarShield online at carshield.com/Carlson. Join millions of customers and contact CarShield now to save 20%. Visit carshield.com/Carlson. That's carshield.com/Carlson. Visit now.
Everything is expensive these days, you know that. The government is printing trillions of dollars in consumer prices higher than ever. If the government continues its printing and spending, the dollar could continue its free fall and lose its coveted role as the world reserve currency. Let's hope that doesn't happen. But there are a few things you can do right now. American Hartford Gold can show you how to protect your money, your retirement, your hard-earned savings against inflation by helping you diversify a portion of your portfolio into physical gold and silver. Start with a short phone call, and they can have physical gold and silver delivered right to your door or put inside your 401k or IRA. So please call or text them right now. Tell them Bill O'Reilly sent you. Call 877-444-GOLD, 877-444-GOLD, or text GOLD to 65532. Again, that's 877-444-GOLD, or text GOLD to 65532.
Welcome to the No Spin News Weekend Edition.
Tammy Wynette is not part of television news. Okay, none of those operations are going to stand by their man. When the going gets rough, you're going to get thrown right overboard no matter who you are. That's the way American corporations work. You may have noticed that ABC News had a big purge in its executive ranks. CBS News, I understand, will soon follow. It doesn't matter how successful you are. It doesn't matter how loyal you are as a worker. Nothing matters if the corporation feels you are a deterrent in any way and it's more than you're bringing in, it's not worth it, you're gone. Now, I assume they'll have to pay out Tucker Carlson's contract. They had to pay mine out, okay? I mean, unless you violate some rule, all right? So I assume that Mr. Carlson will walk away with a nice piece of change. But it doesn't mitigate the turbulence in his life, all right? It doesn't. I know he didn't want to go out this way, and I don't even know if he knows what the inner decision-making was. But this will have a tremendous effect on the future of the Fox News Channel, no doubt about that. But more importantly, on Republican politics in the 2024 presidential election. Because the Republican Party, most of it, paid attention to Tucker Carlson. Donald Trump just sat down with the man 2 weeks ago for an extensive interview, even though Tucker Carlson said disparaging things about Donald Trump. Trump overlooked it and said, you know, this guy's got a big audience, I'm going to go in and talk to him. So now, with Rush Limbaugh deceased, Tucker Carlson vanished, the Republican Party still has some clout. Sean Hannity, big-time radio audience and television. All right, and he's going to support the Republican candidate, there's no doubt. Laura Ingraham will. But the Republican profile in the media is much less now. And that will have an effect on mostly independent voters, because the word won't get out as fast, whatever the word may be. So all in all, this is, I want to check my notes to make sure I didn't, I actually was doing really aggressive reporting today. I got my little notes, I got it all over the place. I don't want to forget anything. Nope, I think I got it. So now you have it. Now I'm going to discuss this on News Nation tonight, 8 o'clock. I'll be a whole bunch of Glenn Beck radio tomorrow. And I will be continuing to assemble information because this is a complicated story. And there'll be a reaction to the story, obviously. And again, we're not speculating here. We're not doing that. We're telling you what we know to be true. And that's the memo. Now, I want to mention briefly, there is a rally, a campaign rally for Donald Trump, Manchester, New Hampshire, on Thursday, this coming, at the Armory in the DoubleTree Manchester. So the campaign is underway, as I said, and this Tucker Carlson thing will influence that. So joining us now from Palm Beach, Florida, is Donald Trump Jr., deeply involved in his father's reelection campaign. And there's a new book out. We'll tell you all about that at the end of this interview. But first, I want to get your reaction to Mr. Carlson and what I just said.
Listen, I agree with you. I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but I look at him as perhaps a once-in-a-generation type talent, someone willing to challenge the conformity and the norms of the establishment, willing to call out senators and governors alike that, frankly, not a lot of people are doing in corporate media these days. And so I think it's a big blow to conservatives, to the GOP. I think Tucker Carlson's someone who's been able to reach across the aisle, in a sense, bring over a lot of independence by actually having the logical conversations that people need to be having, whether that be about war in Ukraine, whether that be about vaccines, whether that be, whatever it may be. And while that may be branded conspiratorial by some in corporate media, it seems like he's been batting pretty solid 6 months later when the truth actually comes out, Bill.
I'm not sure I agree with that on all fronts, but that's for another day. What was your reaction when the discovery for the defamation lawsuit by Dominion revealed that Mr. Carlson said bad things about your father? Did you react to that at all? Did your father react to it at all?
I never actually had a conversation with my father about it. I've had a good relationship with Tucker for a long time now. He's one of the guys I actually, agree with on the vast majority of things. And so, I understand how those things work, and I understand how conversations with other people work. So it doesn't bother me all that much. Everyone's entitled to that opinion. I think the sit down last week was actually very interesting when, a guy like Tucker coming at it and understanding that, Trump was right about things like Ukraine and the war, and one of the few people actually willing to call out that insanity. And so while they may have disagreements on things, and perhaps at that time, because that was around the J6 fiasco where everyone was being fed a narrative, but not everyone knew exactly what was actually going on. I totally understand it.
Was your father angry when Carlson said those not nice things about him?
I actually never had a conversation with him about it, so I don't know.
Well, you just said you did.
No, I said I've had plenty of conversations with Tucker Carlson, but I've never had a conversation with my father about.
Oh, you had a conversation with Tucker Carlson. Oh, so you talked with Carlson. I'm sorry. I thought that's my mistake. So you talked with Carlson about what he said about your father, and what was Carlson's?
I didn't say that. I have, generally speaking, I've had a lot of conversations with Tucker, and I agree with a lot of what he says.
Okay, but I want to get
to the things that he's been ridden on. So I've never had a conversation with either one of them about that one.
About that. Personal. You weren't offended by it that much?
Bill, in all fairness, when you've gone through the stuff that I've been through over the last couple of years, 50 hours of testimony for treason, honestly, someone's text message with someone else in the heat of the moment, literally that kind of stuff doesn't bother me in the slightest anymore.
All right. And I understand. Yeah. Okay. So, your father is the media master, and even people who hate him know that. All right. He, yes. uses the media. That's why I believe he was elected first place in 2016. I did the first interview, as you know, with him when he announced his candidacy. He knows where the audience is, where the power lies, and all of that. So, accepting Sean Hannity, and as I said, Hannity maintains a very high profile, and he will support your father. The Murdochs don't support your father any longer. Have you discussed
that? Well, it certainly doesn't seem that way, yes.
No, they don't. Believe me. No. Have you discussed that with your father?
I haven't, because it doesn't need to be discussed. It's fairly clear. You know, I've said this for a long time, but obviously there's the Paul Ryan faction of the conservative movement, or of the Republican Party, because it's not really the conservative movement anymore. It almost is the opposite of that. You know, it is very clear in what they want to do and the direction they want to go. And I think that's very different than where, you know, the average hardworking blue collar American that also happens to be conservative is. But, you know, you've certainly seen, you know, that aspect emerge. And so whether it's this decision, whether it's the Binion settlement, I can't quite make any sense of it, because I don't know why you'd settle for $750 million with a company who's not worth a tiny fraction of that. The decision-making process there doesn't seem to make much sense to me, but it's not my call to make, so that's up to them.
Well, the reason they settled was that Rupert Murdoch himself was going to have to testify, and he didn't want to testify. And then once that was a fait accompli, the judge ruled that Mr. Murdoch would have to go in. And in fact, he was the second witness set to be called. Then money didn't matter anymore. The man did not want to go in there and testify. And then all the other talent would have to go in. As you know, the press would have just blown that thing up to Hiroshima-like status. And the company made the decision. Again, board of directors have stuff to say about it. You know that. You're a corporate guy. Oh. And they said, look,
hey,
we got to get
out. $1 billion is still $1 billion. So, they could be right. They could lose entirely, but you're not getting an almost $1 billion settlement for a company that's worth a few million dollars. And, you know, at least based on my understanding of that. Now, again,
and
if
why,
you don't want to get dragged through the mud, I know how that works.
Yeah.
Trust me, it's happened to me and my family enough, but it seems like an interesting position to take from a fiduciary standpoint. But if you own enough of the company, I guess you can do it.
Yeah. And why do you think that company has $4 billion in the bank? You don't have to answer that question. Right here, you're looking at him. Okay, let's get on to the book. So this is an interesting book, because I'm a history guy and I love all this stuff. Yeah. So what you guys have put together is Letters to Trump. And you can get this book at 45books.com. Okay. And so it's a bunch of letters that people have written to your father. I'm going to give three examples. The first one's Barack Obama. I thought this was fascinating. January 20, 2017, quote, "Third, we are just temporary occupants of this office." This is what Obama says to your father. "That makes us guardians of those democratic institutions and traditions like rule of law, separation of powers, equal protection, and civil liberties that our forebears fought and bled for. Regardless of the push and pull of daily politics, it's up to us to leave those instruments of our democracy at least as strong as we found them," unquote. Why did your father choose that letter to be in the book?
Well, listen, I think it's historical. I also think a big tenet of the book is sort of the irony. You'd mentioned sort of the letters you want to talk about, and that's sort of modern history. But I think if you go back and look at some of the other people that have written letters to him, I mean, it's royalty, it's Hollywood elite. A letter from Alec Baldwin telling Donald Trump how much of a mensch he is rather interesting when you think of the sort of the visceral and vicious negative attacks over the last few years.
Sure.
From some of these same people. So I think what's really was interesting, we discovered this archive of letters to my father over literally decades of his life and career, and its history, the letters from Nixon talking about, hey, how he'd be a great politician and maybe he'd be able to.
Well, I was going to get to the don't outrun your coverage. I'm going to get to the Nixon letter. But yes. The Obama letter, and as you may know, I like Barack Obama personally.
Yes.
He's very kind to me and my children. It's preachy. The letter's preachy.
Yes.
All right. It's like he's like lecturing your father. And I read this, I go, Ooh, I don't know if that's the tact. I've never written a letter to your father, by the way. I've thanked him for a few times, but I've never, you know, I don't intrude. If he wants to talk to me, he can talk to me. But anyway, I thought the letter was a little preachy. Second letter was...
The preachiness is sort of interesting when you think about, you know, the irony of everything that went on after that, right? We're talking about democracy, and yet he's spying on the Trump campaign. You're talking about democracy, but it's his party that's, you know, creating the Russia hoax. So, you know, I guess that's part of the irony of all of the book, right? People take this holier-than-thou approach, and they're so great, but then, you know, you put an R next to your name, and you're running as a Republican, and all of a sudden, all of that history is forgotten. All of the things change, Bill. And, you know, again, I think, you know, that's what's so amazing about it. In hindsight, you see all of these things and you realize exactly where these people were. And you realize that, you know, the people in glass houses probably shouldn't be throwing.
Yeah, it's a good window. All right. Let's Kim Jong-un, April Fool's Day, 2018. I am thankful for the personal letter you sent that explicitly laid out your great intentions. He's responding to a letter from your father, the president, trying to get this thing with North Korea under control. But what struck me here is, Dear Excellency. See, George Washington forbade anyone from calling a president of the United States Excellency. He forbade it. And then I looked at Young. He doesn't know anything about America.
Well, I have a feeling that Kim Jong-il wasn't thinking about those things when he wrote the letter. But, you know, it was sort of amazing that, you know, my father does talk about it a lot. He gets a lot of criticism for saying that, you know, he had a good relationship with these people.
No, I thought he did the right thing.
Having that relationship, being able to pick up that phone when the stuff's going down in a bad way, being able to have that direct link is truly important. I used to laugh when I saw the beginning during the Trump administration and all the experts, you know, everyone's an expert and Trump's doing it all wrong in North Korea. And I go, well, what's your basis for that? And their basis was that they've been doing it for 40 years, but they've been doing it for 40 years with no successes. They've never even been in the room with the other person. And they're going to tell us why he's doing it wrong. And it was just sort of great irony when you took the success, they stopped the testings, they stopped the this. And, you know, the second Biden takes over, you know, a guy that's a dictatorial or a despotic type figure, sees that weakness and, hey, they fire up those things right away because.
Yeah, I mean, look, I always said you have to deal with the devil in that job. And if you can get the devil on the phone and de-intensify the fire, it's a better deal. Finally, real quick, Richard Nixon, December 21st, 1987, way back. He writes to your father, I did not see the program, but Mrs. Nixon told me that you were great on the Donahue Show. That's Phil Donahue. As you can imagine, she's an expert on politics, and she predicts whatever you decide to run for office, you will be a winner, unquote. That was nice of Nixon to drop that line, right?
Oh, very much so. And again, you know, another politician who sort of, you know, history has vilified. But in looking at the book and in looking at sort of the history as we've become more immersed, you actually look at a lot of what he did. And there's a reason he was reelected in a landslide. Again, because that establishment took him out for a mistake. It's such a different mentality. But that was special because, you know, my father, I went back and watched the interview. I think he was literally talking about, at the time, it was Japan, you know, taking advantage of us for trade.
Right,
and all
right.
of the insane practices of our government officials, none of whom had any experience in business or in trade or in anything other than being bureaucrats. And so what was interesting is that, you know, quite literally almost 30 years later, it's the same line of attack, and he's just been very consistent in his feelings about the country and the bad decisions that our leaders, who are making decisions with real no authority to do so, other than I guess they were elected, but they shouldn't be making these decisions because they had no experience making decisions at that level.
Okay,
and it's why you've seen.
Let me plug the book. Let me plug the book for you, so you can get this book. The easiest way to get it. It's just punch up 45books.com. All right. Comes out officially tomorrow. You can get it tonight, though. Pre-order, you know, it'll come first. Hey, Don, we really appreciate your time. You know, you're very busy down there, and it's nice of you. Nice to see you, okay?
Likewise, my best, Bill. Thanks a lot. Great to be with you again.
Yeah, my best to you, Father.
Recession and inflation are here. Gas, housing, and everyday goods are up, way up. and you want to be ready for any situation. So what would you do if there's no food on the shelf? Arc Heirloom Seeds are here to help. Did you know 99% of seeds sold today can't reproduce? With heirloom seeds, you only have to plant once, then you can grow year after year, giving you and your family stability and security because things are getting crazy out there. Our all-in-one seed kit provides everything you need to grow your own food. This premium seed kit has over 65 varieties, 50,000 seeds, and stores for 15 years. You'll also get our exclusive seed guide to make growing a no-brainer. Arc Seed Kits is a family-owned and operated business and the most trusted name in the nation for over 15 years. Our mandate is to get heirloom seeds into every home in America. Go to arcseedkits.com today and get free shipping by entering promo code podcast. That's arcseedkits.com. Promo code podcast. Get your seeds, get prepared, get growing. arcseedkits.com.
Did you know every day is a perfect day for peace of mind? With American Home Shield Warranty, you are covered for unexpected breakdowns like leaky faucets or faulty water heaters. Choose a plan that fits your budget and rest easy knowing repairs and replacements are taken care of. Simply contact American Home Shield when an issue arises, and their trusted pros will handle it according to your coverage. Don't let worries about appliances and home systems weigh you down. Celebrate the reassurance of protection. Don't worry, be warranty. For 20% off plans, visit ahs.com/bill. For more details, see ahs.com/contracts for coverage details, including limit amounts, fees, limitations, and exclusions. New Jersey residents, the product is being offered is a service contract and is separate and distinct from any product or service warranty, which may be provided by the home builder or manufacturer.
You're listening to the No Spin News Weekend Edition.
So joining us now from New York City is Dr. Lisa George. She is Associate Professor of Economics from Hunter College. So there's a lot of things I want to ask you about. The corporate media, which influences politics and elections and cultural things, as I was just pointing out, the corporate media isn't really driven by ideology, even though most of it's left. It's driven by profits. Would you agree with that?
I would.
Okay.
It's so, definitely driven by profits over the long run.
Right. So profits are sacrosanct. And if the company believes that an individual is gonna hurt their profit margin, that individual is gonna go. And it's as simple as that. It doesn't matter who it is. Would you agree with that?
I would.
Okay. From your perch as an economics teacher, do you believe that Fox News will decline in revenue and profits because of the moves they have made?
Well, I think the answer to that question depends a little on your time perspective and the balance of what's coming in the next few years. So we're at the start, we're at a low news period, kind of easing into a new election cycle. And there are definitely downsides of moving away from a widely viewed journalist and program, but there's also opportunities. So Fox wants and needs middle of the road, undecided viewers who maybe haven't developed firm opinions on every issue that will come ahead yet. And that gets harder and harder the longer a journalist is on the air and their views on many issues become known and fixed. It's hard to move away from those. And so if there was going to be a time to make a switch, this seems like a good time for that switch.
Okay. Now, I don't know whether you follow my career, but we did that on the O'Reilly Factor. In fact, we took surveys. And the last survey that we took, the audience was comprised, I believe it was 50% conservative, 20% liberal, and 30% independent. And I programmed for a wide audience. And we were able to pull that off. 16 years, number one, consecutive years. Mr. Carlson, he programmed hard right. However, they were very loyal, those viewers, to him, were extremely loyal to him, and they came in. The average cable news viewer comes in twice a week. His people came in more than that. And now his people are canceling a lot of their subscriptions to Fox. You don't think that's going to hurt them, bottom line?
So I'm not so sure about the canceling subscriptions to Fox over some period of time. But you're right to emphasize that it's not the viewer of a particular program at a particular time. But is this something that kept people on the network and demanding that Time Warner or now Comcast keeps this station? And there is possibly room to make up for some of that with new advertising revenue and new subscribers as well.
But Fox Nation is where Carlson really drove the profit center, not on his program, as I pointed out, because he couldn't get advertising. But the Fox Nation, which is different from Fox News, that's a fee, a separate fee that people pay, like BillO'Reilly.com. You pay it, and then you have total access to whatever we do. But Fox Nation is hemorrhaging now because Carlson was their main star. But let's move ahead to CNN. Now, CNN has collapsed in revenue because of their hate Trump policy, just drove every discretionary viewer out of there. And then when they had a management change, and the management said, look, we're not going to do this anymore. We don't like Trump, but we're not going to do 24/7 trying to put a nail in his head. The viewers did not come back to CNN. It's a disaster over there. Sign on to sign off.
So I think one of the things we've learned from a few decades of research in media markets is that viewers really do like and appreciate news that aligns with their general attitudes and preferences, not right. necessarily on every single topic, but they do like to see their point of view reflected in news. And so that makes it difficult to move your position around on the spectrum. So Fox has centered its position possibly on the left. There's more battles, but once you put the stake in the ground, it's hard to shift. And I think that's some of what you see in right now.
At CNN, for sure. They don't know what they want to be over there, and that's why. But at Fox News, they have another problem coming up. And see, my opinion is that Fox News revenue is going to deeply decline because they don't want Trump. The management ownership of Fox News doesn't want Trump back in the White House. And the MAGA people, and that's a substantial portion of the Fox audience, they're going to see that. They've already seen it. And that's going to cause more angst on the part of this corporate outfit. I'll give you the last word.
I think that possibly this battle is one that you've learned well, which is the center right cable news market versus the internet pieces and the smaller cohorts in these becoming niche markets. And so I personally don't think the MAGA crowd is enough to drive the Fox News today away from its center right position, but I might be wrong.
Well, no, it's not that. They're going to be mad. You don't want to get, if you're a television or radio person, you don't want people angry with you. That's not the way to success. I mean, you can tee them off, you know, and I have. I mean, I'm not afraid to do that. And one of the reasons that Fox got in trouble with Dominion, as you know, I'm sure, is that they pandered to the audience rather than telling the audience the truth. And that started this whole chain of events, which I think is going to lead to bad news for Fox News in the future. Doctor, thanks very much. We appreciate you coming on and taking the time.
Hollywood is under siege, covertly compromised by a global adversary. The same Hollywood that sold the American dream to the world is now making nightmares a reality. The American way of life is being censored by the Chinese Communist Party. Some films have scenes completely altered. Other films have lost their funding or been canceled altogether. Some actors have been banned from China for supporting human rights. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios. Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in exposing how the film industry gradually lost its integrity on its path to profits. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/Bill. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/BILL.
I'm Mike Slater from the podcast Politics by Faith. This is a crazy time in our country. It's stressful, a lot of anxiety, and it's going to get worse. And I realized that one of the things that helps me take away the stress is realizing that there's nothing new under the sun. So on this podcast, we take the news of the day, and we run it through the Bible and other periods in history to realize that we've been through this before and we can rise above again. Politics by Faith, anywhere you listen to the podcast. Politics by Faith.
This is the No Spin News Weekend Edition.
So I searched around for a guy that I think really knows the presidency and how age affects it. Joining us now from Roanoke, Virginia, is a professor, Edward Lynch. He teaches political science, and he's the chairman of that department at Hollins University. All right, so you and I, we have something in common. We study presidents from Washington to Biden, their tendencies, their successes, their failures. In the older president category, I believe, and I've been upfront about this, that Biden's age is hurting him. It's hurting his ability to govern. So let's first take a look at some of the older presidents and see if they were in the same situation. I mean, we could go way back to William Henry Harrison, right? He only lasted 90 days as president.
Actually, it was only 30 days as president.
And he kicked. He went to heaven or wherever. But he was a rough and ready kind of guy, a tough guy. People elected him based on his war record fighting the Indians. And it's hard to evaluate him. But Americans at that time didn't seem to be too concerned that he was a senior citizen.
No, well, bear in mind that he was almost completely removed from the campaign trail back in 1840, highly reminiscent of Joe Biden's campaign in 2020 when he campaigned from the basement. One of the comments made about William Henry Harrison when he was nominated by the Whigs for president is that the use of pen and paper should be forbidden to him for the duration of the campaign. That was one of his own campaign managers who said that. They did not want him talking.
Well, he's a pretty blunt guy. I mean, it might have been more about him saying offensive stuff and didn't know what he was doing, but I don't know. Right. So you fast forward into Ronald Reagan, senior citizen. I wrote a book on him, Killing Reagan, and in the book, after he was nearly killed by an assassin's bullet, his mental acuity declined. And it was interesting because the Reagan Library objected to my reportage on that, but it was absolutely true what I said in the book. Reagan made an amazing comeback, and some people feel that Biden really isn't in that much of a decline and could come back himself. So let's deal with Reagan first. He was an effective president at an old age.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, there are a couple of things. Number one, Reagan's administration maintained, at least in foreign policy, a remarkably steady hand through a couple of different secretaries of state, four different national security advisors, and you don't get that kind of steadiness, you don't get that kind of consistency if there isn't a strong hand at the top and a strong mind at the top. The other thing about Reagan that separates him from Biden is that Reagan didn't look old. He looked younger than he was. He looked vigorous. He was able to walk more steadily. Biden looks so old. He walks like an old man. He talks like an old man in a way that Reagan did not. And that's one of the biggest differences between the two, and a very important one, particularly even more for Biden than for Reagan, because Reagan didn't have to deal with social media.
Right. And Reagan was an actor also. I mean, but Reagan was a robust man. I mean, yes. he was in good shape and kept himself that way up in his ranch in Santa Barbara, riding horses and all of that. Whereas Biden is a more sedentary individual, and I agree with you, he shows his age. You have a situation, though, where Bush the elder, all right, the next president after Ronald Reagan, because he was vice president, was elected, but then ran against a very young, vibrant Bill Clinton. And I believe the comparison of Bush the elder and Bill Clinton helped Clinton immeasurably.
Oh, I agree. There were a number of things going on in that 1992 campaign, none of which were positive for then President Bush Sr. But the Democrats certainly knew what they were doing that year in nominating someone who is considerably younger and considerably more vigorous seeming. And, you know, that contrast between Clinton and his opponent was even more pronounced in 1996 when Clinton was running against Bob Dole, and the a lot of the national media made that contrast repeatedly in order to hurt Dole's chances.
Right. That's an excellent point. I hadn't even thought of that, but you're absolutely right. So fast forward to now, Donald Trump's pretty vibrant 76-year-old, comes across as much more, much younger, if you want to put it that way, than Biden does. But Ron DeSantis, who is now running second to Trump, he's 44?
I think that's right, yes.
Yeah, in that area. So his youth, DeSantis' youth, if he gets a nomination, would starkly contrast to Biden's senior citizen status, correct?
Yes, absolutely. And that would be one very good reason for the Republicans to take a very good look, hard look at Ron DeSantis as their possible nominee, particularly given the fact that if Trump should be reelected in 2024, he can only serve one term, whereas Ron DeSantis or Nikki Haley or any of the other Republicans would be able to serve two full terms. Youth and vigor is going to play into that even more.
Right. But I got to tell you, I had dinner with Trump 3 weeks ago or a little longer. The guy's a vibrant guy.
Compared to Biden, Trump.
Yeah, I mean, there's no comparison. I told the waiter, I'll have what Trump's having. Whatever he's eating, I'll have what I'll have. Hey, Professor, it's always good to see you. Thank you very much for your expertise, and I hope you'll come back.
Here's a gem from the No Spin News Vault.
And now we bring in a guy who I've known for decades, Scott Rasmussen. He sold the Rasmussen pole outfit. He doesn't run it anymore. But while he was running it, Scott was one of the most accurate pollsters that I've seen. We used him all the time on The Factor. Now, he does daily tracking. Scott is the editor-at-large at Ballotpedia. That is a organization that tracks political races all over the country, not just presidential. He also has a podcast. Everybody has a podcast. Everybody in the world now has a podcast. Scott Rasmussen's Number of the Day podcast. But Scott's is worth watching. Anyway, Scott has a weekly tracking poll. He's got Trump 44%, Biden 48%. He joins us now from Clearwater, Florida. Okay, so am I too hard on Morning Consult?
Well, I don't know that I would call it a fake poll, but if a pollster is not going to tell you the methodology, how they reached people, what the sample looks like, you want to be very skeptical about it. And I wouldn't say you just go from one poll like Morning Consult to Emerson and say, ah, this is it. You take a look at a range of polls. And the reality is right now, if you look at the average of all the polls, President Trump is trailing Joe Biden by a few points. In my own sampling, what we find is if there's a bigger turnout, then Joe Biden's lead grows a little bit. The more people who are irregular voters who show up and vote, the better it is for Biden. The more people who will mail in their ballots, the better it is for Biden.
There's no doubt about that. We're going to report on that after you come up. Yeah. Let me just ask you a few specific questions, though.
Sure.
So right now, my theory is polling doesn't matter. After Labor Day, it'll start to matter a little bit more, but I'm saying that the debates, particularly the first one on September 29th, really going to tell the tale. So right now you got ebb and flow a news cycle, whatever the crazy thing Donald Trump says on any given day. And I use the word crazy in a, not in a literal sense, but sometimes it is a little crazy. All right. It goes up and it goes down. It goes in and it goes out. But I said that I believe the race is even now. It's even. And anything could happen. Would I be wrong on that assessment?
I don't think you're too far off from where I am. I would say that Biden is ahead just a little bit, but certainly anything can happen. First debate is huge because we just haven't seen much of Joe Biden, and he hasn't been challenged very much. And so that could be a very revealing thing. My theory is that there's two big things that are coming into play beyond the candidates. First, everything revolving around pandemic, lockdowns, economy. If people are feeling a little better about the pandemic and a little better about the economy come November, that's really good news for Donald Trump. If there's a second wave and the economy tanks, well, that could be Donald Trump looking like Herbert Hoover. The other issue is what you talked about up front. When the issue was civil rights after George Floyd was killed, that was huge, a huge bump for Joe Biden, because Donald Trump never looks good talking about civil rights issues. But as the issue morphs into law and order, that becomes problematic for Joe Biden. And the more we hear about Kenosha, the more we hear about violence and the Democratic response, the better that is. So you tell me how the issues play out on law and order versus civil rights and pandemic versus economy. That's probably going to pick our winner for the next presidency.
Yeah, and that's why I say that it's not right now. The polling really doesn't matter. But the sentiment in the country, and I think I'm pretty good at this. I predicted Trump would win 5 days before the vote in 16. And I knew that from internal polling and from other journalistic information that I got, because I actually do some reporting, Scott, which sets me apart from 90% of the other people on television. But here, there is a basic struggle, an ideological struggle, because no matter what Biden does, he's tied to the far left. No matter what he does or says, it doesn't matter what he does or says from now until Election Day. Many Americans believe he is a hostage of the far left. Trump, while they may not like him or his style, certainly isn't that. So that we have more of an ideological election than at any other time since McGovern-Nixon, in my opinion. That makes sense?
Absolutely makes sense. And what's really interesting about this issue right now, the things that are happening to Joe Biden, 48% of voters, and by the way, your comment about polls not meaning a lot till after Labor Day is true in terms of the horse race. We can still learn a lot from what people are thinking and talking about. 48% of voters nationwide are worried that violent protests and riots will come to their community. And this is not a case of Republicans saying, oh, we're worried, and Democrats saying, oh, come on. About half of Republicans are worried, about half of Democrats.
Right.
This is an issue that is cutting across party lines, and it is creating challenges for Joe Biden every single day this issue is in the news. He would much rather talk about the pandemic or anything other than the issues going on that the president is highlighting today.
There's no doubt about it. Last question for you. I believe that the pressure of the first debate is on Mr. Biden, because many Americans who don't pay attention, and that's a big amount of voters, they don't watch news, they don't read the newspapers, they hear stuff. But the perception is that Joe Biden is not mentally fit to run the country at his age. If he comes off not sharp on September 29th, he loses. You think that's a legitimate point?
Depending on how not sharp it is, yes. He is in a situation that's really unprecedented. We're dealing with issues that have just popped up in the last 6 months. So you can talk about track records and everything else, but nobody's dealt with these issues specifically before. He's dealing with a president who a lot of people really despise because of the way he characterizes himself. But some of them, about 3 to 5% of all voters, say we really dislike Donald Trump, but we think things would be worse if Hillary had won. So you got that dynamic. And then you've got Joe Biden, who just people don't know what he can do. And if he flubs, He's not going to have a chance. You're old enough, you, and I can remember Ronald Reagan's great second debate comeback against Walter Mondale. I'm not going to make my opponent's youth and inexperience an issue in this campaign. If Joe Biden really stumbles on that first debate, he will not have a chance to make it up in the second.
All right, Scott, good analysis as always. I hope you'll come back a couple of more times before Election Day and give us your thoughts.
Look forward to it.
Really appreciate you helping us out. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you for listening to the No Spin News Weekend Edition. To watch the full episodes of the No Spin News, visit BillO'Reilly.com and sign up to become a premium or concierge member. That's BillO'Reilly.com. Sign